New York Times is reporting that war is imminent as of next week, and it's going to be targeting Iran's energy infrastructure. Military buildup is ongoing. There's reports that one of the Gulf countries, I think Kuwait, seeing significant military buildup this weekend. So everything is pointing towards the unthinkable, which is a continuation of the war. And early indicators and reports, mainly on the Israeli side, is that the next phase will include the targeting of the energy infrastructure in Iran.
Yeah, that's I've seen some of the same comments there. And you talked about the Sean Hannity interview. Trump also did one with Bret Baier around the same time. And Bret asked a couple of pretty hard questions, one of which was, listen, are you going to get Iran to capitulate? Will they open the Strait of Hormuz? And did you get any help from Xi Jinping? And he just kind of waffled a lot about the Xi Jinping part. Obviously, the answer was no. But then he just claimed, just without any evidence at all, that no, they're going to open it up. They are definitely going to open up, and they're going to capitulate, and we're going to get what they want. And he said, look, they've used the Strait of Hormuz as a weapon many times over 40 years. They've closed it before. Never seen any of that. I don't know what he may be talking about, or if he's just making it up out of thin air. I don't know. But he said, they aren't going to do it to me, and they will definitely open the Strait. Now, he left open the possibility, is that because you're going to have some kind of grand bargain and negotiated settlement, or because you're going to go back in? And on top of the New York Times report you're talking about, I also saw one just before it came on your show here, that there is some reports that U.S. and Israel are talking right now, and that probably within the next 24 hours, a decision could be made as early as tomorrow, and then something could happen as early as Monday. I mean, we're not going to see. It, the thing is, Mario, what else can you do?
That was my next question.
We've already seen all kinds of leaked intelligence. And just common sense, we've been talking about this, and I've been having a bunch of experts on my show since way before the war started, and it was self-evident. Militarily, this is not a nut you can crack. You cannot just win, even conceptually, with just bombs. You can't bomb somebody into submission and have them do what you want to do without even a ground component to threaten them, like with the Iraq war, the two Iraq wars, the invasion. But because of the geography, even that, if you had a million-man army, that still wouldn't be enough, because their defensive difficulty is too great for all of the combined power we have. So you can't compel them to. We've seen that all these mountain missile sites, 30 of the 33 allegedly, are back in full operation. And that's only the ones that are on the coastline. There's still dozens more deeper in the country. So you can't militarily conquer them. Then why would you want to go back and try again when it is a virtual certainty that Iran will do tit for tat? You hit their energy, they will hit the other. That, according to everything that Iran has been saying ad nauseum in public, the target list is already set. All we got to do is hit the execution buttons and the missiles will start flying, like happened on the first 48 hours when the war started back in February. That's exactly what they did then. And there's every reason to think that they're ready to do the same now. So why would you go down a path that would only profoundly worsen the global economic and agricultural problems that are already piling up on the daily basis, instead of doing what I've advocated every time I'm on air practically? Walk away. Just claim victory. Trump is great at that. Just claim victory and walk away. Because there's not also, you would think, well, then how about a negotiated settlement? Well, Trump can't. It's a poison pill, because he has demonized everything that Obama had ever done back in the 2015 JCPOA, which is way better than anything you could get today. So he can't make a deal that's way less than Obama. So the only thing really to me left, there's only two possibilities. He either walks away and claims victory, or he goes into a military operation. And I cannot see the personality of Donald Trump just walking away and leaving everything still unresolved on the table. So it seems to me we're back to the likelihood of a catastrophic and self-destructive war.
Yeah, I like talking to you, because me and you go on similar waves, and like, we're optimistic, pessimistic, depending on the developments and as we get more information. Yeah. It's definitely not looking good at all, probably still the most pessimistic since the war started. Now, if you said, what's the point of more military strikes? The only thing that makes sense, again, makes sense relative to other options militarily, the only military option out of all of them that makes a bit of sense is trying a decapitation strike. There's reports that Mujtaba Khamenei is the reason that Iran has such significant demands. So I'm not saying it's a good idea, by the way, because you could get someone even worse. And there's IRGC members that are even, you know, probably more maximalist than Mujtaba Khamenei. But, and we've seen the decapitation strike and spectacularly bad. But in their mind, maybe they have intel, another decapitation strike may eventually get leadership that's more willing to compromise. I don't think it will work, but that's like the only thing that makes sense, because a full-blown invasion, the resources are just not there. Striking their underground missiles, well, according to the New York Times as well, CNN, sorry, 90% of them are still, you know, have been rendered operational again. 90%. So wasting all these munitions to only destroy 10% just shows that everything else is numerically impossible. The only one that makes 5%, 10% sense is a decapitation strike. But yeah, I just don't see a scenario that, oh, and the other one is the energy infrastructure. But that's essentially Trump just sacrificing the Gulf.
Yeah, exactly. That's Trump essentially sacrificing the global economy. I mean, let's just be clear on what that would mean. The only reason why the oil was, I think it ended at 105 yesterday on WTI, was because of all the SPR dumps all over the place that have mitigated against the loss of oil coming out and other storage facilities. Those are running dry. They're running low even on our side. I think only China is the one that has still a lot of capability left, and we'll see how willing they are to help the world out. But once those things get down to some critical level and the strait still isn't open, then there's that the roof is going to be moved off. I mean, the price will keep going up because now there's a physical inability to do commerce. You can't make GDP without energy. It's a one-to-one correlation. And if you now drop it 10-12%, then you're going to get a 10-12% drop in economic activity. That's just how it works. You can't get something out of nothing. All of that will be on the table if we launch into here. And I mean, this decapitation stuff is so insane. How many people have been assassinated by Israel over the last decade and a half or so? I mean, just look at Hezbollah. They assassinated Hassan Nasrallah and almost everybody in the top echelons, and that set them back for a while. And then obviously, just like I observed, every time we did the same thing to the Taliban throughout all my years being a part of or deployed into Afghanistan or in watching the parts in Iraq before that, every single time you take out a key leader, you set them back a little bit, they replace them, and they can continue on. This time, though, it's even worse from our perspective because they have already foreseen all this, and they had, and they said this before, like three or four levels deep over nearly every position. Yeah. So as soon as one's taken out, they'll put somebody else in there. The country is too big. The bureaucracy, the system of governments is too big. You can't kill the government. And if you take out a couple of guys here, there will be somebody to replace them. So that's a mirage to think that that even does have a 5% chance. All that will do is just anger them more. And they already have systems in place to retaliate. So every way you want to look at the military, it is a losing game for us.
That's a good comparison. You're saying in multiple wars, not just in recent wars in the Middle East, historically, decapitation strikes tend to always fail. And especially when it's ideologically based, when you've got a government that's based on ideology, the ideology is enough to maintain structure and maintain commonly shared objectives, unlike Venezuela, which people like to use as another example, where it's not ideologically based. It's mainly financially based, mainly. And also you talk about Mujtaba. Mujtaba is in a position right now, and I've said this before, when you lose your kids and your family, your wife, doesn't matter who you are, it changes your mindset completely. And he's in a position right now where he's fine if this, just like his father, it's fine if this leads to his death, because he feels the cause is more noble. It's a more important cause that goes beyond him. And again, he's lost the majority or a big chunk of his family.
Yeah, and you know, just as a human being, I mean, but who among us would say, no, oh boy, I just want to live. I don't want to get killed here after all this death and destruction on your family, your children, your parents. I mean, it's just egregious. And now you're in control of what's happening next. And then you've got also the weight of the country on your shoulders. You're not going to be concerned that much about your own personal health and the vitality of your country. You'll do whatever it takes to have to bring it in. And he can certainly see that his country is suffering a lot too. I saw a report just again before coming on your show here that the economy is really struggling in Iran, and there's some serious loss of jobs. There's just a lack of food and other kinds of, you know, required items, and they're suffering, they're struggling. they can do this for a long time. They have a lot of history with it, but he sees that they're struggling and suffering right now, and he would like to see that lift, I think.
Yeah. And then you've got the Gulf countries taking action. Saudi calling for some sort of non-aggression pact. You've got Iran is really taking aim at the UAE, man. That's getting a bit concerning. Is the foreign ministry spokesperson said, he who betrays in secret shall be exposed in public. That comes after the Arachi talking about how he's like, you know, I didn't want to talk about this for the sake of, you know, kind of mending relations post-war. But after what the UAE said, I don't know what their foreign minister said. I think he was criticizing Iran's attacks. He's like, look, we have to talk about it. The UAE was the country trying to lead a kind of consortium of Gulf countries to retaliate against Iran. They had multiple Mossad. You know, the Israel threw UAE under the bus as well. Netanyahu, they put out a statement. Netanyahu came to the UAE, and then more reports from Israeli media that the IDF and Shin Bet chiefs also came to the UAE. So I think there's significant tension between the UAE and Iran that one would worry could explode into something bigger for the region. Fingers crossed. I think pragmatic minds would prevail. One other question on the China thing I want to ask you is about, I'm still struggling to understand. I was just talking to Nima about it about an hour ago. And that's a statement from the White House. According to them, Xi Jinping said that China will buy more American oil to diversify away from the Strait of Hormuz. Not enough people are talking about this, and I'm not sure whether that indicates, and apparently cargo ships, Chinese cargo ships, are already docking in U.S. ports. Is that maybe Trump informing or China realizing or both agreeing that the war is going to continue, and then Trump offering a gesture to China by offering American oil to diversify in preparation for the possibility of what we said earlier, a continuation of the war, the U.S. striking Iran energy infrastructure, and them expecting Gulf energy infrastructure to be struck as well?
I mean, it certainly could be. It's there's so many different things it could have been. It can also be just Trump. I don't hesitate to say this. I think he's in cognitive decline, and a lot of the things he does genuinely make no sense, because I think he's struggling to be able to put things together. And he could agree to something like that that we don't even get anything for. If you offer China, hey, you want to come get some of our oil? Yeah, sure, no problem. We'll take your oil, no problem. We'll come in and get that. And if we don't get anything for that, if there's no quid pro quo, you got to say what's in it for us to give you our oil. Because look, the only reason we can export a lot more oil right now, Trump keeps bragging about all these empty VLCCs that are coming here and filling up in Texas, Louisiana, and Alaska, is because we're getting rid of our strategic petroleum reserve. That's the only reason we have extra oil to export, because ordinarily we have a fixed amount that it's kind of a system that's been working prior to this war. And you can't it's not like just cranking the tap on and making it come out of the ground faster. It doesn't work that way. So the only thing you can to add to the export is to draw down from your strategic petroleum reserve, which is supposed to be for our national security, not to make China happy. So I'd like to see those numbers and how that factored into what he may be willing to do with China. And we'll see if it even comes to pass.
Yeah, and people don't realize that the U.S. is a net importer of crude oil as well, even though it produces a lot. So that's an important fact.
It is.
There's another thing that Trump said. He admitted that uranium retrieval is about optics for the fake news. He said, quote, "I don't think it's necessary except from a public relations standpoint. I think it's important for the fake news that we get it in terms of the enriched uranium." He says the sites are completely destroyed. Rebuilding would take 25 years, and the U.S. has 24/7 eyes on them. We know exactly what's happening. So what I'm hoping there is an indicator that Trump is preparing his MAGA base to say, look, we're going to walk away without even the enriched uranium. But then the story he's going to sell them, which is not a bad story, to be honest, like we have eyes on them. And some analysts have told me this, is that if we – now, that's assuming we actually do, though the U.S. actually does. But if they do, then they know it's most likely buried underground. If there's any attempts by the Iranians to, you know, dig it out, there could be a limited strike there against the Iranian infrastructure that's digging out the enriched uranium. So in other words, a good way to confiscate it is, instead of making a deal now to take it out of the country, is that making sure it's in the same place in the country – and ensuring that Iran does not dig it out. So that would be one scenario that takes the more optimistic path out of this. Not sure if you see it that way as well.
Well, there's a couple of different interpretations that we could apply to it. One is then that Trump is simultaneously trying to set the conditions for a couple of different things. Either the walk away theory, which I have been advocating for by saying, yeah, we've destroyed all this stuff, their Navy, their Air Force, air defense, and blah, 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 killed all these people, then destroyed all this. It'll be 20 years before they can rebuild. So that would fit into potentially that narrative that he's trying to set that up. That's one theory. The other theory is that this is, again, part of the evidence of his cognitive decline, in that part of his he's losing the ability to decide what you say and what you don't. That's true. That could well be true, that, hey, I'm just doing this for optics. There's no real idea behind it. We're not going to go get it. And instead of keeping that private, he just says the private part out loud because he's losing the filter. Because the danger is that we think that, oh, no, he's got this all figured out. He has a plan. And I'm just telling you, Mario, it is harder and harder for me to see any plan on any subject with Trump. It's not even just transactional. It's just momentary. Whatever's in front of him, he'll make some kind of decision now. And there are so many people around him that are in his ear trying to, I think, exploit this weakness and trying to convince him just to make a decision in my direction. And so they're using him to do whatever they want. And according to, I think it was The Atlantic, there's apparently quite a number of voices that are on my side of this that are trying to talk him into the walk away theory.
And then Robert Kagan.
Then, you know, all the other ones. Kagan could be one of them, but apparently there's several others on the inside. And then there's the other ones that are, you know, saying, no, let's go back to war. So we'll see who's going to win.
Okay, so you're saying, according to The Atlantic, there's people within Trump's inner circle, some telling him, hey, the least bad option is to just walk away, and others are trying to egg him on to continue the war. So he's going to go. Yeah. Same thing as we had before the war. He had two voices, and he listened to the one that convinced him to start the war.
And my hope, and I have another source that has very high access in the White House, and that there are some really well-placed people making that walk-away argument. And the question is going to be, is Trump able? And then this is, I'm sorry to harp on this, but is he able to see all you guys who've been advocating war are the same ones who said it was going to work before and you were dead wrong? Why would he listen to them? Logically, he wouldn't. Logically, he wouldn't have taken the first step. But now it would be irrational to the highest degree to listen to them again instead of the guys who were proven right before, if he can make a logical decision.
Yeah, it's like in high school, you've got that friend, hey, do this, go do this, trust me, do it. It gets you in trouble. The next day, you listen to him again and again. He's like, you know, fool me once, I'm an idiot. What is it? Fool me once, you're an idiot. Fool me twice, I'm an idiot. Something along those lines. I want to talk about Ukraine, because obviously that's something you've been covering for so many years. And I've been looking at the developments, which from a quick look on the information that's available, the tide seems to be shifting based on certain metrics. So according to ISW, Russia has lost territory in April for the first time in, I think, since August 2024, if I'm not wrong. Also, their rate of advancements for the other months have been significantly reduced in the last few months since late last year. And there's various, and obviously Ukraine is targeting their energy infrastructure, their oil refineries, and logistics networks aggressively. And also Ukraine, to make up for the manpower shortages, Ukraine's using robotics very well. So putting all these things together, it seems that Ukraine, the tide is shifting slightly in Ukraine's favor. Is that correct or not in the last few months?
It's not correct. There was unequivocally been a reduction in the amount of forward movement by the Russian side. I think it was February and March was a near net zero. There was no gain, no losses. That's what you just said. That's news to me about the ISW, because what I had seen was the opposite, that they had picked back up the pace in April, and then now here in May that they're increasing again. They're starting to go back in on the offensive and taking territory, especially here in just the last week or so. They have definitely started taking more territory. The Ukrainian side had done a number of operational level counterattacks in a different place, especially in the center part of the zone. But Russia is making another pretty big move right now in Zaporizhia in the south and up in the north in the Kharkiv area. So I would dispute whatever the ISW is saying right now, but there had been some. But there is also some evidence that Russia is preparing for something much bigger this later spring, early summer. And that's one of the reasons why they were just maintaining what they had, to keeping the fire going on and to continue to attrit through drones and everything else on the Ukraine side, not because they got bogged down and now they can't forward move, but they have chosen not to push that any further so that they can build up combat power to make a bigger move now. And we could be seeing the first part of that in Zaporizhia, because there has been, in the last 3 or 4 days, pretty concerted efforts down there. Gerasimov, the general of the chief staff for the Russian side today, announced that they had now completely taken all of Luhansk, and that he said that they are now moving, I think it was the 25th Army, is moving in the direction of Kharkiv in the north. And so they're now apparently they're going to open up a front up there as well. And to me, the biggest issue is, even aside from what's happening on the front line, I had Ambassador Polyansky, who is the Russian ambassador to the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, yesterday on my show. I was asking him some hard questions because you've had a guy named Sergei Karaganov and a couple of others publicly open, one on Glenn Deason's show, saying, I think we should launch conventional weapons at these targets inside of Western Europe. I advocated this. This is what he said on Glenn's show. I advocated this to the government. And if that doesn't deter the Western countries, then we should go in with tactical nuclear weapons. Just straight up said that outward. So I wanted to say, all right, it's one thing for a guy who can, it's almost like Jack Keane for the U.S. Trump listens to him on the phone, so you can't ignore him, but he's not a government official. So Dmitry Polyansky said on the show, he said, listen, it may already be too late because they have crossed so many of our red lines, given territorial airspace in the Baltics for drones to come in and hit us in the north. And these long range strikes that are now hitting deeper and deeper into Russia can't happen without Western technology, intelligence, and targeting, et cetera. And he said, so you're now directly involved in the war. And the only thing that makes sense is for us to hit your drone factories and missile factories, places where you manufacture the things that you're letting Ukraine use to hit us. And I said that, I mean, that would be an Article 5 situation. I mean, we could literally get into a direct war. And he says, yeah, I hear you. And I hope it doesn't happen. But he said, right now, I think it may be too late. And I was just stunned that, guys, I didn't expect him to say that. I thought the diplomat would be more effusive and say, well, could be, could not be. But he came about as close as the diplomat can to saying that's a decision that's already been made. So it's kind of starting to line it up. And that is blowing. No one can believe that. I've talked to many people in the West, and they say Russia would never do that. They know it would be Article 5, so they're not going to do it. And here's the problem, Mario. We have gotten ourselves locked into, from the beginning with Biden, we were afraid of all kinds of escalation if we did this or gave them that weapon systems, and we did all of it, and it never spawned a reaction from Russia beyond the borders. And so we came to believe nothing ever will. But that is not a good gamble. That's what Polyansky said on the show. He said it's not a good gamble to believe that there are no Russian red lines, and we may find out soon. So I'm worried about that.